Hello, all, and welcome to the Fantasy and Sci-Fi Fanatics Podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Kubal. Today, I have me a very special guest, Colin J.D. Crooks. How are you doing today, Colin?
I am awesome. Thank you, Daniel, for having me on. I'm so happy to be here. This is amazing. Thank you very much.
Yeah, not a problem. I was happy. I saw you on TikTok, and this book cover like caught me instantly. And then I was looking you up, and then I was like, oh my God, he has two of them. And sounded the blurb sounded right up my alley. So I was so happy that we could connect, and thank you so much for sending me both. I was afraid to bring out the other one because I really like that book cover in particular. The illustrator in me was like, oh my God. And it just the blurb really spoke to me for both. So I was so happy that we could connect and get you on today and talk to you about your
Totally.
book. So
Really beautiful book covers done by Daniel Schmeling, who's a very, very talented artist.
I was looking up more of his work, and I was like, this is really incredible. So yeah, so really, really, really great move, getting both of those covers in. So but we'll start there with that first question. What has your writing journey been like up until this point?
It has been early mornings and scraps of stolen time. I have fit in writing my novels whenever I can. I started writing my first book around when my first child was born, and we didn't sleep for 2 years. So I wrote that book in a sleep-deprived haze, right in between customers at work and 5 a.m. wake-ups, while trying to fit in a growing family, martial arts, exercise, and all that stuff.
I call it
Yes,
the
it is, right? But
grind.
it's a passion. I love doing it, right? And I just like if I miss a day, I just don't feel fulfilled or happy without it, right? So
I totally feel like I'm right there right now. I try to get as many words, done before my son was born. Things just happen, work, and I've switched jobs a couple times just for necessity's sake after the pandemic. And yeah, I totally feel you. Like, I'm literally like, last night I couldn't do anything between my son. I had work,
exactly.
so I was like, oh, I didn't get anything written yesterday, but I was on like a roll, with something I was working on and editing. So I definitely can't wait to get at least 10, 15 minutes tonight, right? And maybe, get more. But it's funny because I was listening to Herman Stuenengel, and I think it was like Edward Ashton was talking, and he's like, I write, he goes, a lot of my first two, three books I wrote in 15-minute intervals per day, right? So for me, those writing sprints have been really key. This year has been a little harder because I have more responsibilities at work. We're like rebuilding a whole program here at my school, which is like multiple programs. So by the time I get home, I feel like my brain's fried, but I keep trying to. I just think if I get, 15 minutes worth of work done, it's better than nothing. So.
Totally. I try to do a word count, right? Like I try to do 1,000 words a day, right? I juggle with dictation and I juggle with typing. I've tried that like brain frequency music. And it really just depends on the day, right? If I can sit outside in the sun and dictate, I will literally pump out 1,500 words in 20 minutes, half an hour, right? And then other days it's the 5 a.m. grind, chugging the coffee, struggling to get out 500 words, right? It's fun.
My friend, he's like, what keeps you going? He goes, how do you do this? I'm like, I just want to write. I'm like, one day I'm thinking like, and I always say, I'm like, I love being a dad more than author and a teacher. So I'm like, I always just put stuff aside, but I keep trying to get there. Because I know at some point, like, I know my kid's not gonna want to hang out with me anymore, and one day I'll have all the time in the world to write, and I just talked to Jeffrey L. Kohonic about that yesterday. And he's like, yeah, at some point my teenagers started leaving the house because I get more time to write. But yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, I feel like if you have to do it, you have to do it sort of thing. And I just have characters, right, that are just like, hey, we want our story told. So you just gotta push any way you can. But it is definitely a grind and definitely need the coffee at 5 a.m. So
Totally. And it's also great to have those kind of priorities as well, and just know that you're working on a goal, you're pushing forward. Little bits every day add up to a huge, awesome, amazing published book, right? That you can hold in your hands, right? And, the people in your life need to feel important and loved, right? And that you spend time with them, well, in the time that matters.
Well, I had a friend and he's like, oh, you're doing this. He goes, and then you're doing this. He goes, your podcast, there's these things. I was like, ah, it's like, I'm just gonna keep doing. He goes, you gotta eliminate something. I was like, I'm just gonna keep doing everything. I was like, I'm just gonna stay up a little later, do more writing sprints in between, work or something. Like I'll sit there for 15 minutes and my kid will be chilling. I'm like, okay, time for a sprint, but I feel like it's also important for me to, to get this thing done and done well, so that when my kid is old enough to understand, I just think it's going to be so cool. My kid's about to turn 2 in January, and that's like one of my main goals, right? I just think it'd be so cool for him to grow up. Like, yeah, my dad's a teacher, but my dad's also an author. I think that just shifts your perspective, growing up a lot more. And I just love Jim Butcher and his son's relationship with writing, and I just think that's super cool. Or like I've went to a lot of my uncles, my dad had a lot of books and I loved growing up with a lot of books. So I don't know. I think that relationship piece, has a lot to do with it too. But again, it's about goals, right? And like what's important to you. So everybody has different ones. So that's why I was asked that question, because we all have the same goal, which is to write a book, get it out there. But I think how, like you kind of mentioned, like how we get there, is different, or maybe why, but in the long run, we're all trying to do the same thing, which is cool. So
Definitely. And like my dad's relationship with books, right, is primarily the reason why I love books so much, right? Because he was such
awesome.
a big influence and such a huge reader. We like different genres, but like we come together on a few novels, right? Like The Expanse and like, and we can really have these amazing, wonderful, connected moments over the things we love.
Yeah, no, totally. My dad was really into the classics, like Robinson Crusoe, Shogun, Lonesome Dove, stuff like that. So I had a Yeah, like I would say same thing. My mom's like more into romance books or thrillers, mysteries, things like that. And thank God for my uncles, right? Like
Yeah,
bringing in sci-fi and fantasy and my cousins. But yeah, like yeah, I definitely agree with you. It's really cool when you can. I think it's cool when you have that background. As a teacher, I see that all the time, and I see that as a huge success. So I have a massive library. I think I have enough books, definitely maybe two times that, right? Where I could be like an official library in the United States or whatever if I really want the plaque. So I think it's always just cool, I think. And I see a lot of kids, who their parents, the same thing. And they always do better in school, and I have to tell them to put the book away, which hurts me, at times. If
Sure.
they're reading the Wheel of Time or something like that. But it's always cool. I think we could connect with anybody, right? A young reader in particular, and try and kind of push them more, into some of those more interesting authors or series or worlds. So I think that's really cool.
Oh, so they can just find the passion in
Yeah,
reading so
exactly.
that when it comes time to like read a classic, then you actually do enjoy it, right? Rather than it being an assignment that you have to do and it's drudgery, right? And it makes the whole experience boring and painful. But if you know that there's like joy and passion in the words, in the moment, in the images that come into your mind as it grabs you by the soul and takes you for a ride, it's, yeah.
No, I think that's a great way to put it. Yeah, definitely makes things more enjoyable. I always enjoyed English a lot more, English class a lot more, for that love of reading. But that really leads us to, our next question in particular about genre. So what genre or genres are you currently writing and why?
I am currently writing epic fantasy, and it's because I love epic fantasy. It's, like Tolkien, was my mother's milk, right? It's the book that taught me to read, and I've been immersed in fantasy ever since, right? And the why is a really big question, because I love being taken away by other worlds, that clash of nations, the struggle against overwhelming odds, the magic, the monsters, swords, and the wonder, and I wanted to put all of that love into the books that I wrote, right? So, that's why I picked epic fantasy, right? And I'm the my current books have a very heavy influence of military and progression fantasy, as well as a grim dark aesthetic to them, right? Because I was inspired by, again, the things that I loved, right? Characters like Lanman Dragaeran and Jaime Lannister and Anna Amanda Rake from the Malazan series, right? I loved him. That
Yeah.
chain sword, that, totally. It was
Amazing.
so awesome, right? So, I just wanted to put that stuff in my writing. I do write some children's books for my
Oh, cool.
children, right? However, I haven't moved on looking at publishing or, finding an agent for them or anything like that, right? Because they were written for my daughters, right? And so, they're theirs. I might move forward on that one day, right? But, I'm really focused on finishing the Shards of Aetherius, and, writing a big series like that is kind of all encompassing, right? And it's with such limited writing time where it would be different if I could both do like 4 hours a day and then write a couple of different projects. But when I get like 8 hour a day, if I'm lucky, I am all in one project, as much as I can, right?
No,
Totally.
totally. That's where I have been doing. I've been switching to some of my prequel novellas because it's just easier for
Yeah.
me. It's just easier for me this year for next year to get that stuff out. People keep asking me, "What are you writing?" Like, I want to. You're talking about these, what, and I don't know. I just, again, I think that's like each to their own, right? I want to have something out there. I want to contribute. It's cheaper for me to do novellas. I'll run Kickstarter after three, put them in their own anthology, have four products out there. I've had some people talk to me about audio, and they're like, "Oh yeah, I'll do that," and that seems cheaper too, for what they quoted me and stuff. So I don't know, but it's interesting to see how people do different things, right? So I totally agree with, I think it's too hard to, I had a couple things that sounded really cool to people I talked to. I'm like, yeah, I have this idea. I just kind of, I don't have a lot of writer's block, 'cause I'll just move to something else for a day or two and just to keep writing. That's my thing. And then it kind of comes back and I'll be able to focus on, this thing. But, yeah, I think it's interesting to see how people do different things, and why they do different things, particularly in genres. But I agree with you. I think write what you love, right? That's what Jeff and I talked a lot about in our previous interview. Same thing. He does a little bit different subgenres for fantasy, but I think all of us love particular things about fantasy. I love sci-fi, I love horror, but for me, like, fantasy is just really fun. I discovered fantasy a little bit later, like middle school. Like, I discovered The Hobbit, Knight's Word, which was a great book, The Forgotten Realm, stuff like that, Dragonlance, and after that, I never stopped. So sci-fi had to share me with fantasy.
Okay.
So yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah. When I first started writing my series, I was elbow deep in A Song of Ice and Fire,
Oh,
right?
nice.
Joe Abercrombie, Mark Lawrence, right? Jim Butcher as well, right? So they had huge influences on the direction in which I was writing this story, right? So, right? Like, I've got more books in my brain than I have time to write, Well, I have 7 books planned for this series,
Oh,
right?
cool.
And then I've got like 3 or 4 other series that have just never left my brain and just keep poking me. Hey, man, let us out, please.
Know that feeling. That's awesome. Well, I'm glad to see, right, that, I love, where was I had a couple of private conversations with some readers, and they're like, "What do you like?" I'm like, "Well, my problem is some people, I love the characters they wrote, but it's a trilogy." I had that problem a while back with an author. I absolutely love the character. I'm like, "Can we go back to this amazing, and they sold really well." But they're like, "Yeah, I'm kind of done." I'm like, "Oh, like, that's one I wish I had gotten five or seven." I had Kelly McCullough on, with the Dark Blade series, season one, and I was so happy. Like, he's working on like three more. I had like 7 books, three more for the series. But I'm a huge Jim Butcher fan, like you said, especially for urban fantasy. And I am actually on book eight for Dresden Files right now, and I don't
Oh yeah.
know. I love the longer series. I think we're just kind
Totally.
of used to it at that time, right? When we're growing up and reading those, so I agree with that. So I'm just think that's cool, because I think longer series for me, when you can develop a character more and you get to envelop yourself in the world more, I think is really, really cool. So
Definitely. Definitely. Jim Butcher is one of my favorite authors. The Dresden Files, I freaking love it. And just the way he does his character development of Harry, it is just a really slow, incremental, change. And it's all about him getting his face bashed into a brick wall, He has to learn those lessons really, really hard. You know, and I've never seen another author do such a slow burn character development, you know, right? Like you read a Brandon Sanderson and it's like he starts here at the end of the book, he's in a different place, and then you know, there's different character development for the next book. Whereas, you know, like the Dresden Files just feels organic. It just feels natural. It feels human, right? Rather than that, like lesson learned, you know, like obstacle overcome, mountain climbed, what's next, you know? So, yeah.
Well, I'm like, so like I'm in a spot with Mouse in particular, and no spoilers, but you know, for people, but I think Mouse is an interesting character or an example of Jim's ability to write and give you little kernels, right? So when Mouse is a puppy, you're like, okay, something's not quite right here. And then very slowly, and I'm in book eight and I'm like 54% of the way through, and you get another little kernel, like two kernels of Mouse being X, Y, and Z, not your typical dog. Now, most people, even with something like a secondary character or animal companion or whatever, same thing, right? Beginning of the book, end of the book, this same thing, right? He's very particular, which I would agree. But I think it's not even just Harry, it's the other characters. Michael's another good example in that particular book as well. And Michael's daughter, you know, and even like Charity, his wife. But I think even with the secondary characters, like even their development, right, is very Susan would be another great example. You know, Karen Murphy's a great one. I think he just does a great, such a great job. A lot of people, I think, just focus on the main character too, but he's very incremental with really, I would say, just about anything in there. So yeah, it's a very interesting character study on how an author does that for the world, I would say, even. He's really incremental. So I would agree. He does everything very precisely. He's like a surgeon to me, is what it looks like
Totally.
for characterization. So yeah, that's
Yeah.
super cool. Well, that's awesome. Well, this is next question is one of my absolute favorites to ask people, just about their books in general. So we get to that third question. What are your shards of Aetherius books about, and how'd you come up with this idea?
Okay, so book one is about a hard-bitten, remorseless warrior on a redemption arc in the backdrop of a multination war. Right, you know, he starts out the book as a complete sociopath, right? He is there to commit an atrocity and he is enjoying every moment of it, right? And then through the events, you know, of that book one, he learns the error of his ways, and I wanted to mimic the character development of The Last Samurai, right? You know, how he like, you know, how he sees the common people, you know, he sees the wrongs he's done in the past, and it just viscerally repulses him what he's done, right? And then he's just unable to reconcile who he was with where he is and what's next, right? So then the future of the series is about Roderick, my main character, being dragged through the mud. Right. And then building up this intolerance to tyranny and injustice. And then how he rises up to become, I mean, I don't want to give too much away, but like rises up to become a pillar of virtue and morality in a dark, gritty, brutal world that, you know, needs a character, a person. To shelter those who can't be shel who can't shelter themselves, right? So that's ultimately the direction I'm taking in the series, right? And book two, Blood Mage, is very dark, right? It's got a very dark ending, right? And I did that on purpose, right? And you know, one of the things I tried to do with this series is foreshadowing, right? Like again, I don't want to give too much away, but I pretty much tell you exactly how the book series is going to end in that first five chapters, right? And you know, so right, the foreshadowing and like all the events have been foreshadowed, and I do subvert some plots, I do subvert expectations, right? So Hopefully people enjoy that because I certainly enjoyed writing it, right? Some people, have, said this is good, but I hate you for doing this. But, so anyway, hopefully it's enjoyable.
I get that. I get that. I get that so hard in my soul. In book club, it's an ongoing joke between my best friend and I because we read Red Malazan, Book of the Fallen. I won't say which of the 75 characters that Erickson kills throughout the series, but one in particular, I'm like, why would you do that to this character? And I've never gotten over it. So now, every time we read, like, reading Way of Kings, there was a point where I was like, I love this particular character. And no, it's not Kaladin. But I really like this other character. I was like, please don't kill this character.
Totally.
I was so stressed to finish that book. So yeah,
But
I
it's a lot
definitely
different
understand.
than reading a George R. R. Martin, right? Because when
Yeah.
George R. R. Martin, kills a character he kills in book one, you realize that nobody is safe and everything can change, right? That was the big thing that like the show dropped the ball of, is that like in those last three seasons, major characters died and there was no world-spanning repercussions like there was in episode one and two, right? World was so impacted by that beheading in season one, and you could feel the ripples on the other continent, right?
No, it's, I feel like that's very fair. I remember at that time too, like talking to my reading friends because I had just started to make real author friends, like writing friends, and we're just like very shocked. And my friends like, "Have you read the books?" I was like, "No, we're waiting for the rest to come out." And, yeah, that first couple episodes, I was like, "Oh, I love Sean Bean." Oh
Yeah,
my gosh! And then after that, I
totally.
was like, "Wow."
As if that wasn't foreshadowing, right? Yeah, totally.
Yep.
All
After
right, you
that, I
asked
just
about,
yeah.
you
Is
asked
it?
about like other inspirations, right? Like the inspiration for my main character was absolutely Darth Vader, right?
Oh, cool.
I wanted like that. Like when he walks into the Death Star and he's choking people with his hands and everybody is just totally afraid of him, and then he bows to the Emperor, right? So that was definitely one of the inspirations. And I was just really disappointed with the way Anakin Skywalker was handled in episodes one, two, and three.
Yeah, I
I
do
was
know.
expecting, this virtuous warrior to embrace the dark side and slaughter all the Jedi. That is what I what that's what we had been told that episode one, two, and three was going to be. And we got a political love story, right? I kind of wanted to do that redemption arc differently, right?
That's
Or
cool.
like a fall from grace as well, right? One of my other characters in the series is going to have a fall from grace, right? So that was super interesting. And one of the magic systems in my book is called the Path of Ascendancy, right? And in this book, people die and the afterlife is a real thing. I wanted to write a book where gods, you could reach out and touch them, right? They ruled the land in place of kings, right? And those were the gods of the mortal realm. And then in the night sky, you can see the afterlife. It's a physical place, right?
Oh, that's cool.
And each world, each solar system is inevitably being drawn to the center of their spiral galaxy where they will be torn apart and absorbed into the afterlife, right?
That's cool.
So the whole point of the conflict between the gods is that they have to survive until the sundering so that they can ride their shard of Aetherius into the afterlife where it's absorbed. And then they become part of the greater pantheon, which is the ethereal battle. And then it's the ethereal battle is the eternal war of the transcendent gods and all the souls they harbor, right? And so one of the main inspirations for that was that old show Highlander, how you had these mortals walking around, cutting each other's heads off, beating each other, power, right? Because a soul can die, they can go to the afterlife, and then they can come back with, you know, if they fight their way free of the afterlife, they can be returned to their body, and they arise as an arisen, right? Which is this kind of like proto God, right? Where they are, you know, they hunger for blood, they need souls to consume, right? So they can, by their actions, they can like become more virtuous or more evil, and then that brings them on the spectrum of being, you know, a divine being or a, you know, descendant, like a fallen god or a demon, right? And so, you know, based on whether they, you know, kill and devour the souls of, you know, more demons or ascendants, that affects where they are on that spectrum, right? So, yeah, totally. That was definitely one of the influences as well.
Oh, that's super cool.
You.
No, that's really neat. Yeah, I wasn't. I just find it interesting because you talked about Anakin, and I thought Hayden Christensen got a lot of grief for George Lucas's crap is really how I
Oh,
see
yeah.
it. And the other like writers and stuff. Yeah, I was really disappointed because I remember reading. I read so many Star Wars books and I was so excited for Phantom Menace to come out. And I remember there was like a book that literally talked about the battle on Mustafar and stuff like that between like Obi-Wan and Anakin and stuff. And it did subvert a lot of expectations, I think. And I don't think in good ways. Like I think a lot of people, had speculated for a long time, like what that would have been like, whatever. So I find it interesting that you said that because there is a book trilogy from a very famous, there's multiple, but game series that the person, the author was like supposed to, I found out later on, was supposed to get like another trilogy. So they were promised this, and then the game end up getting the company got bought out, and then they're like, yeah, we're not doing these books anymore. And that person got cut out. So I read these three absolutely like amazing like D&D type party stories this
Sweet.
in this amazing setting, right? Yeah. And then you get to the epilogue. And this was about 8 years ago. You get to the epilogue, and because that author was promised another trilogy, they changed the epilogue with one small scene. I know, right? Where one of my favorite characters anybody's ever written grabs this sword. That he thought was magic and it's cursed, and then he's overtaken by this sentient sword, and it ends, and we never got anything else. So much like Anakin for you, I would say that arc that crushed me as a reader because and I didn't find this out until about 2 years ago that I just thought it was a horrible ending that they were promised another trilogy and didn't get it, but that really struck me where I'm like I had to rewrite. That ending, if that makes sense. And I had to write that wrong. So for a lot of the stuff I write, I'm like, I always go for that, right? It's like, I don't want to ever, granted, right? I can do that as an indie author, right? You can do seven book series, right? But I think
Yeah.
that's what appeals to me as indie, right? If somebody else wants some other stuff, I have certain things I write where if that, they want it traditionally or whatever, they can have a say in it, whatever. But there's other stuff where I'm like, I absolutely want it to be how I want it because of those expectations, if that makes sense. So you and I have both been wronged in a way. So we
No,
use
right?
writing to tr write writing to try to right that wrong for ourselves and others, which I think is really cool. So I definitely connect when we're saying that in particular. But absolutely cool ideas though. But again, I feel like a lot of that, which I have to give you some credit here, Colin, your blurbs to me. Really quickly, like spoke volumes about the world building characters, and the grim darkness or epic fantasy,
Yeah.
things that are coming out with the tr not just the tropes, but just like the style. So I think if, people are, I always call this a journeyman's podcast. People are just getting started. If anybody wants to check out a good blurb, you got two from Colin right now. So check that out. So between the cover, your blurb, for me, that's 60% of the battle is the cover, and the other 40 is the blurb. I don't care about reviews personally. I just, I don't know. So I just thought that was both were really well done. So I thought that was really cool.
And my paper blurb is, I wrote it in first person, right? Specifically because you don't see many epic fantasies written in first person,
True,
right?
yeah.
Well, I needed to say right off the bat, this is what this is, right? And just be unequivocal, because if you're not going to like this, don't read the book, right? If you need a third person book, high five, right? All the power to you, right?
No, I
Yep.
totally agree. Yeah. But I think that's smart of you though, because what you did that might other people might be like, "Oh, whatever, this isn't for me." That to me was more interesting. You know, as a reader who's read thousands of fantasy and sci-fi books, particularly fantasy at this point, I'm like, I want something a little different. I want something that stands out. You know, I don't know. I want to see something used in a different way. I want to see a cool magic system or some of the things you already talked about for the world building. Like that's up my alley, you know, particularly as a reader slash writer, right? So I don't know if I, but I thought it was a good move on your part to put your cards on the table right from the start.
Well,
I don't know. I thought it was cool. So
thank
definitely
you.
drew me in. So just want you to know that. So
I appreciate it.
yeah, for sure. So when it comes to characters, I'm just kind of curious, talked a little bit about your main character so far, but like what sort of cast of characters can we expect from this series?
So my main character is Roger Corwin, right? And I've already talked about him. His alias is Avatar Wrath, and he's the Avatar of Wrath for the God of War, who's named Kyber, right? And the gods of my world are very morally gray, right? There's some really hard evil characters, right? Like Arrakis, who is the god of the Arachnids, which are a sentient spider people. Right, there's Lyris, who is the goddess of winter's bite, and she infuses her people with the frozen fire, which is like numbs all feelings, right? And like there's the main love interest, her name is Cassie, and she's a troubled girl from a broken home who really wants to get her mother's approval, right? And through the course of the books, she realizes she doesn't need it, doesn't want it, and learns to defy and come into her own power and strength, right? And then Hector, who is one who is, starts out as an untrustworthy sort of best friend, right? He plays a fiddle, he's a spy, he's a traveling bard, he goes through the countryside playing for people and spying on what the other allies are doing. But as the book progresses, like him and Roderick really do become really good best friends, right? And so that challenges his undying loyalty to his goddess, Enris, who is goddess of sex, wine, and a good time, right? And yeah, there's fun that she's fun. Right, so there's gods, and then there's immortals, and then there's the regular, sort of mortals of the world, right? There is the other avatars, Avatar Justice, Truth, and Might, and then one of the other major characters of the series is Sergeant Vanyard, who is a grizzled veteran who Roderick and him have a very deep history together. And I don't want to say any more than that because it might spoil stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's really cool. You said so many like words there. Like if we could just like light
Yeah.
up I'm just saying if we could light up like a bulb behind me where every time you said a word that was like my Google search or just like something that is gonna interest me to read your book or the series, like we're like ding 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 ding. So I can't even like usually I can pick out like two or three. I can't even do that. You just said so many things there that are up my alley. Which I think is really cool. And I think it says a lot, right, about readership, right? It's like your audience. So I just wanted to point that out. I think some people they're not sure, right? Like who's gonna like it or whatever. So they're not really sure what to say or or how to sell, themselves or their writing or the characters of the books. So I don't I feel like you definitely know, what you have and where you're going and who's gonna enjoy it. So I am your audience, Colin. So
Sweet.
there. So I was gonna say I forgot to mention earlier, I'm Kind of, I'm writing very similar type fantasy characters, I would say,
Yeah.
in certain ways, you know, because that's what I love. Like, I love reading the old school Luke Skywalker, 90s Paladin, 80s Paladin, whatever, you know. But I also really enjoy flawed characters that learn lessons. Your Johnny Lawrences, if you will, of the fantasy or sci-fi genre. I love Cobra Kai. I love the redemption arcs. You know, and even if they're not fully redeemed or whatever, you know, but just different ways of people doing that. But yeah, I think it's really cool, you know, the characters, like the cast you have here. I'm glad I asked you that question because it makes me seem more excited. But I bring that up because I'm actually doing like my friend, he's like, what you love like Justin Lee Anderson's like The Lost War, right? He's like, you got some very roguish people, whether, you know, whatever their class is, but they're rogues, right? And
Yeah.
then like Christopher's like the Black Tongue Thief, right? That's a very roguish party, particularly the main character.
For
He goes,
sure.
why don't you just read rogues of some sort, right? Whether it's sci-fi or fantasy. So I have your book on my list and I'm like going through this like, you know, gray hero vigilante or just, you know, just roguish phase for my 2025 reading. And I was reading through my list yesterday and it's just like, I'm just gonna have a great time because those are the
Yeah.
characters, you know, that I enjoy reading. So I think that's really cool. So we definitely got you on the right list for me for
Totally.
2025. So
Yeah, I recently read a coming of age story, and I am just past that, right?
yeah.
Like, you know, I didn't enjoy it as much as I should have because it was a good book, right? You know, but I don't know, man. I'm just a dude in my 40s. I'm jaded, I'm old, right? I just want to read about dudes in their 40s who are jaded and old,
And
right?
now we know why you like Joey Abercrombie so
Yeah,
much.
totally.
That's awesome. But I think that's a good point though. It's like Joe, I haven't read Joe yet because I have so many and I don't even know. I bought so many, but my friend and I have been rearranging book club for different authors so much and it's just been tumultuous. So at some point we were just like, we just gotta start reading stuff. So we were with Mal's in Book of the Fallen. So and he's like, don't read Abercrombie without me. I'm like, I told him that I was like,
Yeah.
I might just have to just bypass you. Yeah, but like I've talked to so many people, listened to so many podcasts or Joe talk, and I don't know, I think it's cool that, you know, he has so many different characters from different walks of life, different ages, right? Because all of us can find somebody at some point to relate to one of those characters in a story. And you know, they have real life problems like the rest of us, right? You had to eat, sleep, and not die, you know, in a day. So yeah, I totally agree with you there. Like there are certain stories I used to read where I'm like, yeah, okay. Like Richard Flanagan's Ranger's Apprentice series, like, you know, 12, 14 years ago when I discovered him, you know, I was younger, like I was like mid-20s, but you know, the character was also getting up there. And now I tried to go back and re-listen to him. It's just not really the same thing, you know. So I totally get it. I still enjoy him. He's a great author, great characters, recommend it. But yeah, it's different point in my life, you know. So now I have a kid. So I was talking to an author the other day and she was like, yeah, my main character. And actually, I had D.R. Holt on too, and his main character is a parent and has to like discover, like, both their characters have to discover as a parent how you protect your kid, but also save the world at the same time. So I'm like, oh my God, that is stressing me out just thinking about it, you know?
I
So
know, right?
yeah, it's cool but it's cool to see characters at different points and read about them, right? Because we're not all mid-20s anymore. I love reading about a character like, like Adrienne M. Gibson's like Mushroom Blues, like his main police officer, she's like mid-50s or 60s, and she's talking about when she has to get up in the morning, snap, crackle, pop, right? I'm like, I feel ya, you know what I mean? She's like,
Yeah,
run
totally.
up, and she's a smoker, so she has to like run up these stairs. She's like, and I'm like, I get that. I work on a college campus. I'm like, I went to the gym the other day, and then my kid, I had to carry him all around for, you know, Thanksgiving, Halloween, and you know, it was just like it was nuts, right? And I was so sore. So I totally, when someone writes a character realistic like that, like, you know, my age, I'm like, I totally get that. So I just think that, you know, having different characters, you know, at different ages, experiencing different things that we experience, I do agree with you. I think you connect a little bit, you know, differently and in different
Absolutely.
ways. So yeah, I think that's a really good point that you brought up. So that's really cool. Well, that sounds really awesome. I'm excited for book one. I'm glad you sent me book two. I probably won't be able to stop. But what was your main focus when it came to the world building for this setting?
Immersion. I wanted it to feel
Good
immersive,
word.
right? And the way I do that is by trusting the reader's intelligence, right? I try not to have any info dumps, right? Explanations, right? When you start out the book, my main character, he knows everything. He's lived in this world, right? So a lot of stuff is just taken for granted, and you see things through his eyes. He's not going to comment on how a piece of technology works, right? Or like what this fantasy race, really looks like, behind the mask they show the world, right? Because he just knows, right? But then something happens in the book where, he gets a reset, right? And his memories are no longer trustworthy, right? So the things that he thinks he knows some of it, but he doesn't really know all of it, right? And one of the main influences for this was the way that Steven Erikson did his world building, right? And I didn't want it to have it be such like a hard wall, steep learning curve straight up, right? I wanted it to be a slow trickle, but I really wanted that feel of like, a Dark Souls game where you come into a new room and it's like it feels like you can expand. And anyway, right? So, he sees things and his memories aren't really trustworthy. So you get this like drip feed of the magic systems, of the world, of him experiencing things for the first time. And a lot of it feels really familiar and he feels like he should know stuff, right? And he starts to question whether his own emotions and memories are trustable, right? And his own points of views, whether he can really trust that. So, right? Yeah, that was the main thing I wanted to do with world building, was have it feel real and be immersive and not take you out of the story.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, that first Gardens of the Moon, like 60, whatever, 58 to 65 pages, depending on
Oh yeah.
the book you have. He like just tries to drown you. Like you swim or you sink, right?
Totally.
So
And he does that for three books in a row. Three books in a row, right? Like you finish book one, and you're like, okay, I have my footing. I know what's going on. You start book two, completely different characters, completely new setting, right? And you're like, I don't care about this stuff. You finish book two and you're in tears, right? Just like emotionally wrung out, Then book three is the exact same. It's like, who the heck is this? I don't care. And then he winds up being your favorite character by the end of the series, right?
He like book two, like Deadhouse Gates. Oh my God. I got in and I was like first 60 pages, I was like, I don't want to read this one. And my friend's like, no. Like I credit my best friend for us getting through at times because I was like, and then we get going, and then I'm like, okay. And then when you get to the part where it's like a D&D party on an adventure, and then there's other stuff happen, I'm like, okay, cool, let's go, but yeah, I totally agree. And that's like book three, you're like, what are we doing? Where are we at? But yeah, he ends up being one of my favorite characters for the entire series. So yeah, but like his ability to give you new characters in a book and then have them be one of your favorite characters, or I don't know, he has such an ability, which is like crazy. But and Sanderson talks about that too, right? Like Brandon will get, you're not, you and I aren't gonna get, right, 200,000 words to make an impression, or 250, right? Like we gotta be able to do that shorter, because it's the same thing with Erickson. By the time you get to the later books, like I'm like, are we really gonna read an extra like 500 pages of stuff that we don't need to read? But then it's gonna end up being somewhat interesting or giving us more character. I don't know. He's got a way about him. Definitely not my style of writing, but I definitely enjoyed reading it. I felt like my brain hurt once we got done. But yeah, it was just a master class. And here's a new character. You're gonna love this character by the end. Like I've never seen someone be able to do that in a book, let alone one epic fantasy book. I don't know, especially a new character. It's really incredible. Yeah, well, that's really neat. I love that word though you used, immersion. I haven't had a lot of people. I've done a lot of interviews. I have a lot of people use that term, so I just love how you use that word in particular, because I think it's a really great way to put it. Like I said, he drowns you, right? But I like how you're trying to immerse. I think that's a really good way to put it. So
Well,
I'm going to steal
that
that.
is
I'll
like
give you
the
credit, but
number one thing for me when I'm reading a book, right, is immersion. If I'm taken out of the world, if the character doesn't do something that is the character, right? Or it's very obviously plot armor, or they're using a real world term for something that is in the world. It just breaks the book for me, right? You know, and w the book I just read most recently was The Sword of Kaigen by Emma Wang, and it was amazing world building. It was so good, you know, just everything about the way she did it was great. So, you know, anyway.
That went back to my list. I took it off a while back. Had to add it back. That and the Poppy War are another one I'm popping back on. Well, that's really cool. I think emergence is a great way to put there. Yeah, me. Well, it's funny because I just feel like when, we're talking about immersion, I feel like like plot armor. It's funny because my friend was Logan D. Irons was like, help me out as like an alpha reader for one of my stories. He's like, I tell you one thing, he goes, you don't believe in plot armor. I was like, oh no. I was like, this guy went through the ringer. I was like, and that's like the whole point of my prequel trilogy, right? It's like you find out that how this person's life changed. And it's, I don't know. My wife goes, do you ever feel bad about him? I go, don't worry. I go, in his actual series, I was like, he gets his thing. I go, but he gets put through the ringer to
Yeah.
get to the good part. But I feel like that's life. So I think that's
Absolutely.
fair. But that's really cool. What type of magic or fantasy tropes did you focus on, for this book or series, and why?
I really wanted to write an original magic system, right? You know, so I do lean on some tropes, right? You can't really write a magic system, I feel, without like, you know, fire, ice, earth, gravity, you know, like some kind of element like you'd see in D&D, right? But you know, I wrote it so that when you start out, it is a soft system, and then it slowly becomes harder, and then we'll get harder with each book as it progresses, right? I have multiple magic systems in the book, right? There's blood magic, there's the path of ascendancy, there's rune magic. And there's imbued weapons, right? So imbued weapons are like enchanted weapons where a god will forge them and then they can specifically do a specific thing, right? You know, like one of my main characters or side characters, Hector, right? He has a lightning whip that he created and
That's
that
cool.
is an imbued weapon, right? You know, rune magic is used by the priesthood, right, as a direct result of their faith through the gods, right? So they'll inscribe a rune in the air and then it will do a thing based on the written word, right? So like, you know, lightning, boom, lightning shoots out of the word. You know, like a glass shard and a shard of glass will shoot out, and each god has their own sort of aspect. You know, the path of ascendancy, like I said, is this spectrum, right, where the arisen start at zero and then they can go to the good side or the dark side, and it's a flowing scale. It's not solid because I wrote it because I wanted to explore a progression system where the character could regress,
Oh,
right?
yeah.
You know,
Interesting.
right? And the way that blood magic works is that, you know, they've gone to the afterlife and they've brought a piece of it back. And then they can consume things from the world, right? Be they other deities, spiritual essence from the world, like a place of power, and then they can bring it into their inner realm, which is the piece of the afterlife that they brought back, right? And then they have to use their own blood to take the spiritual and give it physical form, which then rips it from their inner realm and makes it physical in the physical world, right? So if somebody wanted to, you know, create, you know, pull a wolf out of their inner realm, then they'd have to give it enough of their own blood to allow it to take shape, right? So this creates a real hard cap on what can be done, right? Because, you know, you will see in a lot of books where they just have one more spell in the tank and it's the one that saves, right? You know, so I wanted to write a magic system where it could really have a hard end and then have actual repercussions afterwards.
That's cool. That's awesome. Yeah, that just sounds really neat. I like how you came up with that. Yeah, that's really awesome. We'll have to get you on at some point with some. I have a few people that are coming back in the spring. I was trying to do it this summer. I just got slammed. But we're going to be doing like a couple seminars to get like three or four authors together. So it'll be cool to have you come with a couple other authors in terms of like the magic systems or world building. I think we'd have a good time. But what can
Sure,
readers
I'd love to.
expect? Yeah. I think it'd be
Thank you.
awesome. I have a couple in mind. I think it would just pop off. We'd have a really good time. But what can readers expect from these characters and books in the future? I know, you mentioned like seven books. That's really exciting to me. I think that's just really awesome. But I'm just kind of curious that, what we can expect in the future. I know you don't want to spoil anything, but other than, seven books, I'm just kind of curious what we can expect.
Okay. So I am currently working on book three, which is Awakened, right? And then I've got the next four books in the series plotted out, right? After this book, I am planning a prequel novella that
Oh, cool.
follows Sergeant Vanyard, right? It's going to be called Heavy, and he is sent on a rescue mission, like Saving Private Ryan, to go and get the one remaining heavy from this forward outpost before it is overrun by the arachnid swarm, right? And so that may very well turn into its own trilogy, but I have to write that book. It has been
Yeah.
taking me for a very long time. So I got to get that one out. So after I finish Awakened, I'm going to write that one, put it on my mailing list for free. Right? But what readers can expect from my characters is the darkest of times can bring the brightest of lights, right? One cannot be redeemed unless they have truly worked for it, right? And that's where I'm at with this series, right? So does that make sense?
He totally does.
I
That's
want to
got to
say
be a
something.
t-shirt, by the way. That's such a good
Yeah.
quote.
Thank you.
That's really cool. But no, that makes total sense. You got to go through the crap before you can get the reward. Or I always say, work hard, play hard. You can't play hard till you work hard. But I think redemption, I agree with you. I think that's just cool. Again, I bring up Cobra Kai. They didn't just be like, oh yeah, Johnny's changed and he's this
Yeah.
good guy. Like he still have a lot of flaws. But I liked how they did Daniel's character too, because he's not 100% good or right all the time. He still is a hothead. He's still, he's flawed. They're both flawed, and teach each other in different ways. That's what makes it interesting to me. But yeah, I agree with you. That's like I tried explaining to a couple people with a couple characters. I'm like, I find that's real life to me. So I don't know. I love fantasy and sci-fi, but I also think it's interesting to take characters through those real life aspects or journeys, and show people like, you know what, they might be like Harry, right? His hand's scarred, right? Can't use it, whatever. You know what I mean? Yeah, you can see his battle wounds literally, physically, mentally, right? So I think that makes total sense, but I think that's why people still root for Harry after so many books, right? Is they see themselves in here. So I think that makes total sense with what you're trying to do, in terms of the series and characters. So I think that's really awesome.
That's why I call my series, Grimdark, right? It's not dark and extreme for the sake of being dark and extreme, right? There is some real darkness, right? And I wanted it to reflect reality to a capacity, right? As you go, as people go through a war, there is some real hard things that happen, right? And you sometimes have to look right at the darkness. And then also beautiful moments will happen, right?
No, I totally agree. I'm trying to capture some of those things. Well, my character is a veteran and becomes a monster hunter, and it's like the prequel trilogy is like set 2 years, I would say, like before the main series. And I tried to explain to people, I'm like, he's not done, like he's really just starting out. He is gonna do a lot of dumb things before he can get himself figured out. I was that way in a lot of different times in my life, so I want to reflect that. So yeah, I totally get that. I think that I know. I think that makes a better story, just in the long run, short and sweet a bit. I think it's just cool. But again, yeah, I like how you're setting that up for the series. To me, it just sounds awesome. Not just the world building magic, but just like your kind of goal, in general. So I think that's really awesome. I love that type of theme for redemption and learning from your mistakes and just growth, really. So I think that's really cool. And we're winding down in here, but I want to make sure we got enough time for that last question. I know you talked a little bit already, that previous question for things you have on the horizon, but I just want to make sure we're not missing anything. Sometimes people have stuff, that pops up last minute or they think of. So, do you have any news, updates, or any other current projects, anything like that that you want to share with us before we get done today?
Hard at work on book three, right? Stay with me. It will be in your hands soon, right? I am saving to make an audiobook version
Oh,
of
awesome.
all the books, right? That always comes with a little bit of a price tag. I am also working on reformatting books one and two to get hardcover copies out as
Cool.
well, right? So I'm hoping to just have more products,
Yeah.
right? And That's about it. Hard at work, nose to the grindstone, working as hard and as fast as I can, right?
Yep. It's funny because I feel like with indie in particular, we're like, oh, that it doesn't feel like that's a lot, but that's a lot of stuff, right? That's a lot of products. That's a lot of work. That's a lot of time. So I just want to, commend you on that. I think a lot of us, we forget at, like how much time, energy, and money, all that, what you just said was, in particular, we have to work at a faster pace, than the other markets and stuff. But I think sometimes I just want to point out and celebrate, indie authors and creators, because I think we forget how much we do sometimes, if that makes sense. So that all sounds really awesome. I just want to remind people. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Kyle.
I do have a prequel novella called Eclipse that is free on my website with a mailing list
Oh,
signed up.
okay.
Yeah, totally. And it follows Cassie, the main love interest, right? And it
Right, got that.
explains how she winds up in the situation she's in, where my main character meets her in book one. And those questions are not going to be answered throughout the series. So you have to go download that prequel novella from my mailing list with a mailing list sign up to get those answers.
Okay. Sorry, I'm going to put that in my notes so I can do that tonight because I did not know that. So I'm so glad that you said that. And I always ask this question because something like that always comes up. And you're like on my mailing list. I have to sign up for yours. And I think I got one a couple weeks ago. So I have like five of you guys this week. So I'm like one down right now. So I got four more to go. But I just want to remind people, this is your first time, or if you're just coming in at the tail end of the interview, for whatever reason, you can find all of Colin's social links, book links in the description below, anywhere where you're listening, watching, having a good time here. So just make sure you go there. I want to make sure we're reviewing all products for directors, authors like Colin, creators, whether they're indie or traditional. It just helps everybody, including our, like Colin, you already said, right? You're a cover artist, right? Editors, any of those people, right? It just helps everybody in general. So I just want to remind our audience of that. Colin, thank you so much for coming on. I'm so thankful that you sent me the books. Thank you so much. Like I said, that book mail video will be coming out. You are on my list, so I'll have another video actually next month for my anticipated reads. I'm actually going to put that in a two-part video. It's just I'm trying to do like 40 books, so it'll be like 20 and 20. So you're on my list for book one in particular. So I'll send that to you as well and then relink these later on once I get that. But other than that, my friend, I'm really excited to, start both books and to see where the series goes. But I'm on TikTok. If there's anything else, yeah, please show that one because I left it at home. I love the first one,
Age.
but that one really hit me. It's
No.
just,
The
I don't
shine.
know.
There you go. That's better.
It just hit me in particular. I love both with the red, but that one I really loved.
Yes.
First one was cool with the sword and the tree, but I love that one. It just reminds me of an old D&D adventure that I used to go on in a video game. And it just brings back that nostalgia. So he did a
Oh,
great job with
God.
that. So that's cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. If there's anything else that I can do in the meantime, love to have you back on, when you're prepped for book three. So, keep me, in mind for the tour, stuff like that. And other than that, send me anything on my blog and I'll get it up on the podcast site and on all of our social media. But other than that, my friend, good luck with writing book three. And I look forward to downloading the prequel as well and to getting through, and get caught up to book three. But other than that, if there's anything else you need at all, you just let me know and we'll get it done for you.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Daniel.
Yeah, for sure.
This was a really amazing conversation. Thank you so much for having me. I'd
Yeah,
really
man.
like to meet you in person. And
Yeah.
have a drink.
Yeah. No, for sure. Yeah, we'll try and connect and try and make that happen. But on that, Colin, I hope you have a fabulous rest of the day, and I will talk to you soon on social media, my friend.
Yep, you too.
All right, see you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.